Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Fin Wrap. Your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Let's get into our first news story of today. And one of the most important figures in South Africa is the GDP growth numbers. If our economy is growing, we're creating jobs, we're creating wealth, and we're uplifting people from poverty. Unfortunately, the latest figures do not tell a good story. Our quarter-on-quarter growth, seasonally adjusted in real GDP terms, saw only a 0.1% growth increase this quarter, in the first quarter of 2025. It's a pretty bad number. I think expectations were that there would be zero exactly GDP growth, or at least rounded to zero. So I guess technically slightly better than expectations, but still very weak growth forecasts. And effectively, with a growing population, this means that we are per person getting poorer. The economy has been in the doldrums now for a long time, for many years. We have gotten effectively poorer than we were in about 2008, when South Africa reached the peak of its wealth. One of the sectors that performed quite well this season was, in fact, agriculture, which I think surprised some commentators. It performed better than expected, despite all the tariffs and other problems, because there were good seasonal things going on. But mining in particular suffered, construction decreased, electricity, gas and water, and manufacturing all shrank, which obviously is bad for jobs. Finance sector remains the most important sector in the country, with about 24% of GDP coming from finance. Personal services at 17%, trade at 14%, government at 9%, manufacturing at 13%. We also saw some of the effects from the AGOA trade deal, or the collapse of the AGOA trade deal, with the imposition of tariffs from the US. South African car exports to the US dropped by a third in the first 3 months of 2025. There was a slight increase to other countries in the world, but clearly this was a contributor to our low economic growth. But Chris, it seems to me that the fundamental problem here is that the Government of National Unity has not made the important and necessary reforms needed to turn around the economic situation. And unfortunately, until those reforms are made, we're going to be sitting with growth figures like this. Your thoughts?
So about a year ago, well, not exactly a year, but soon after the GNU was formed, I started talking about this risk that it might be, in the long run, a bit of a sugar high. So it gives useful momentum and it gives some idea of a new government and reform. And I'm not saying I want to undercut some ministers and some departments performing better than would have been the case had it still been a sole ANC majority government. But in terms of real economic growth, unemployment rates, real fixed investment, we're not seeing the metrics moving in a positive direction. So we should get, I'm not saying we should get used to it, but this low growth is South Africa's normal. It's not bucking a trend that we were growing at 5% before COVID, for example, even after COVID and the lockdowns. Between 2012 and 2023, South Africa averaged 0.8% GDP growth per year. Last year, we grew 0.6%. The population grew 1.3%. So we're consistently operating below the 1% mark, maybe touching 1.5 if we're very, very lucky, like the bounce back in 2022, 2021, after the harshest lockdowns. But if you talk about the levers of the economy not functioning, I mean, you talk about inconsistent electricity supply, logistics. I think Transnet, after electricity, is the binding constraint on the economy. And then other policies that increase uncertainty.
Can I say, on the electricity point, I think there was the sort of expectation that with load shedding at least being massively reduced, that this would, you know, create an enormous rebound. But the problems with electricity firstly go deeper in the fact that a significant number of the electricity shortages are not caused by the national grid not having enough power, but by local failures of infrastructure, you know, lines being stolen, things breaking, transformers blowing up, etc. And also the fact that at the end of the day, it is still these much larger factors than just electricity. Fixing electricity is really important, but it's only one piece of the recipe in order to get economic growth.
Yeah, just to highlight two of those sectors that underperformed or dragged growth, we look at mining and manufacturing. So the excuse will be, oh, it's because of global sentiment being depressed with what the US administration is doing around tariffs. I think that's way too easy an excuse. I mean, had those sectors been reliable and had been able to rely on electricity, logistics, flexible labor markets, more flexible hiring and firing sort of legislation, they still would have grown because global trade is shifting now in different ways, being caused by the sort of tariff plan by the US administration. Just a very last point to add on GDP. We always look at real fixed capital formation. So that's your investment in heavy plant equipment, machinery, roads, bridges, those assets that, if you invest in it in a country, it tells you that you've got more confidence in that country. Those are things that are more difficult to take out. It's easy to invest in stocks on the stock exchange. That's a bit, that's fine. You can buy and sell those. But if you invest in real equipment, that tells you you're more confident. South Africa aims to get 30% gross fixed capital formation as a percentage of GDP by 2030, and we're consistently around the 12, between 12 and 15% mark. In this latest quarter data, in the first quarter of this year, real fixed investment contracted by 1.7%, and in the fourth quarter of 2024 by 0.7%. So if you're talking about investments by the public and private sector in infrastructure, in those assets that a real economy needs to grow, not just sort of frothy stock markets and that kind of sentiment, we're not seeing that confidence in a very real sense. And the burden of proof is on South Africa to shift this. Why would international investors, if you come into now 2024, 25, after more than a decade of below 1% growth, what proof do we offer that we have really shifted?
No, this is exactly right. And of course, the cost in human terms is very real. Every time we have a poor economic growth figure like this, you can expect there to be very little change to the unemployment figures. They may even get worse. And you can expect to see more people trapped in poverty, unable to improve their lives, unable to get out of the situation we're in. And for that, we need these important reforms to the economy. We need to fix the logistics system. We need to repair the infrastructure, including things like electricity. But perhaps most contentiously, we also need significant regulatory reform. We need to make it easier to hire and fire people. We need to strip out excess sort of regulations, red tape, all of the rules and the power of the Competition Commission, for example, is a great example of an industry, a group that causes a huge amount of red tape. And you need to strip these things away in order to start boosting economic growth. And then once you've got economic growth, many good things follow from it. You get more in tax revenue. You get more people entering the workforce and generating wealth and productivity. This can create virtuous cycles that spread through your whole society. Until we make those changes, however, we are not going to see any major turnaround, unfortunately. Time is of the essence because every day lives are ruined and potential is stifled. Now, speaking of the wrong way to go about this, our Transport Minister Barbara Creecy has recently announced that the Department of Transport is in fact going to be pushing ahead with its plans to create a new state-owned enterprise, in this case, a national shipping carrier. So South Africa did actually have something that was effectively a national shipping carrier about 25 years ago, but was eventually sold off to a private company. Chris, when you sent this story to me, I think we both sort of threw our hands up in the air and screamed because is government really, really thinking that another SOE is a great idea right now? Your thoughts?
Yeah, Nick, maybe I get so frustrated because I do measure some of these policy proposals by the metric of reality, right? So what is there to indicate to you, number one, that any of your SOEs, Eskom, Transnet, the SANDF, Postnet, I don't know, whatever else, that they've actually performed to a
About
level that they provide a return on investment, number one. Number two, global shipping, international trade, and how difficult it is to think you can manage that from a bureaucratic political point of view. You're already seeing globally the shifts in trade, and shipping is responsible for the majority of global trade. If you mess with that sort of thing, what that does to your country's ability to attract investment, to job creation, just basic economic functions from an export-import point of view, you're really cutting yourself off at the knees. This is I mean, if you're going to talk about a global environment in which things are uncertain, this is like 101, something that you shouldn't do, along with, for example, raising more barriers to trade and making it more difficult for investment, all of that kind of thing. Those countries that have better trade infrastructure, better fit-for-purpose trade policy, are going to benefit at this moment of uncertainty. However, if you go in a direction where you've shown that you don't have the financial or skills capacity as a government to run any SOE, what does that say to businesses in your country and to potential investors from other countries, from the US, from China, from the UAE, from Turkey, no matter what? This is the very last point. South Africa's export volumes aren't at a level to support this kind of initiative, even in the best case scenario. So what I mean by that, because we've hollowed out domestic manufacturing capacity, because people, businesses can't rely on the ports and the railways as they are already, those export volumes aren't there to justify an investment in this kind of national shipping company. So again, I think if I'm being kind, I don't know if I'm being kind, but maybe from a sort of trying to reason through this point of view, why you do this is because it's going to benefit vested interests in business and in politics. They can deal with these costs. They'll get a stake in whatever this thing is called. And that's where it goes. That's where it ends.
It's absolutely crazy. And I, you know, when you ask why the GDP growth figure is so low, well, it's exactly because silly schemes like this are being pursued rather than actually making those hard decisions to fix things. This is not going to fix the logistics problems in the country. And only if you're deeply out of touch with reality would you think otherwise. All right. Briefly, our last story for today. We are just finding out as of a couple minutes ago from when we were recording this around sort of 3:30 that Floyd Shivambu has been removed as the MK Party's Secretary General. Yet another twist and turn in South Africa's most chaotic political party. MK constantly seems to see internal conflicts, ructions, twists. And now, it seems like this, at least on the surface, is being attributed to the fact that Floyd Shivambu met with the extremely controversial self-proclaimed prophet from Malawi, Bushiri, who was charged with rape and fraud in South Africa before he fled the country after being granted bail. Weirdly enough, when Shivambu went to Malawi, he met with this guy, and that has received significant criticism since then. So that's probably part of the reason he was removed. But one suspects that internal politics in MK may in fact be the real reason driving this this thing. And, you know, on one level, I think this doesn't matter, Chris, because Zuma remains sort of the unchallenged leader of the MK party. Zuma is the brand of the party. Zuma is why people vote for the party, people who like Zuma. On the other hand, this guy was touted as going to revolutionize the internal organization of MK. He was a sign that the party was branching out away from its sort of KZN heartland, the fact that it's mostly voted for by people who speak Zulu as a first language, that it was, you know, basically trying to eat the EFF's lunch. And yet he's now, you know, being removed as Secretary General. So I don't know, Chris. I can't imagine this is great for MK's internal momentum come the next election. What's your take on this?
I think you're exactly right to highlight the sort of internal politics and dynamics, especially between Mr. Shivambu and Duduzile Zuma. I mean, that has been bubbling, not even under, but very publicly for at least the last 6 months, if not longer, the maneuvering around that. I guess when you have a political party built around one individual, their own whims, what they do for their family and their friends, that's going to determine who gets these positions. And then if you make yourself a target in a useful way, such as this meeting with Bushiri, it's a useful excuse to then move you, to redeploy you. Although I think at this point we shouldn't say he's been redeployed, he's been redefloyed. I think this is the more accurate term for what happens in MK at this point in time. I think their future stability hinged so much on building proper branch structures and influencing things from that point of view to ensure they've got a secure voter base through the next local government elections, into the next national elections in 2029. And I do think for all of one, what could one could differ with Mr. Shivambu ideologically, he did that quite well for the EFF. So he did well to build that kind of organizational capacity to assist with that, especially along with, of course, the leader, Julius Malema. So I think a blow to MK's stability, which was already seriously in question, if you collect this group of individuals who have checkered histories, if we can put it very diplomatically and very lightly, they're always going to try and vie for Zuma's attention and his favor, and they're going to undercut each other in different ways. So this sort of adds to that maelstrom, to that uncertainty from a national level for the party. And we'll see if this now translates into any of their performance in by-elections and going forward. What do they also do as the official? They're supposed to be the official opposition in parliament, actually. And I think they've missed many opportunities to use that platform. The budget, of course, which was the latest, which I thought the EFF took quite good advantage of. So if MK was already incoherent in that regard, I'm not sure what message and value offering they're going to be able to present from a sort of in a coherent manner leading up to into those next local government elections.
I do think the EFF seems to be recovering a bit from the really bad slump it was in. I mean, I'm not sure to what degree that's real, but it certainly seems to have a little bit more focus and energy than it did even quite recently when it was, you know, leaking people from all ends. And it's helped by the fact that its main opponent in that sort of far left radical space is MK, who, you know, now are just so chaotic. I mean, you know, what is anyone in the EFF who's now looking at maybe switching to MK might be thinking to themselves, okay, I could, but what's to say that I won't just be chucked out of the nice position I get within 3 months? It's not a great advert for a party that wants to recruit people and solidify itself. And of course, the fact is Jacob Zuma is 83. If he's the only thing in the party, you have put a timer on your political party then. That is relatively short term. So yeah, a lot, I think, in the air still about where MK actually ultimately lands in our politics. Does it collapse? Does it thrive? Does it become the new EFF? A lot of questions still to be answered, but the defloydization of Shivambu here, I think, is not a great sign for the party's longevity. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. Hope you found the show interesting, and we will see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.